Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 82 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Wow, today we're going to be talking about a mother's story of her son's addiction, and it's a rich one. You're going to learn a lot. Before we start the segment, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review this podcast because, gosh darn it, I read these things and I love to hear from you. Okay, promise. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
We're going to have such an episode, a mother's story of her son's addiction. We're going to be talking to Lisa Hillman, and she's been a development professional for more than 35 years, former president of a foundation for a major Maryland healthcare system. She began her career in broadcast journalism, a brethren. She serves on the boards of two recovery centers, helping addicts to regain their lives. She's got two beautiful children, Heidi Anderson and Jacob Hillman, and lives in Annapolis, Maryland with her husband and their greyhound, Harry. I have two German shepherds, so hey, you know, I know the feeling. She is also the author of Secret No More. And I really want to start this segment immediately because we've got so much to talk about. So, Lisa, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Dr. Peek, thank you. It's an honor to be here with you. Thank you.
Why'd you write the book?
Well, that's a great opening question. I wrote the book because I had to. That was the first reason. When addiction first reared its ugly head in our household about 10 years ago, I started keeping a journal. And several years ago, I thought, you know what? Let me expunge myself of all of this angst and depression and fear and anxiety. So I started writing the book. And as I was writing it, I'm thinking, not only is this helpful to me to see these thoughts and words and feelings on paper, but perhaps my story just might help someone else. So in essence, I wrote the book in hoping that it might help somebody else.
Wow. Okay, so how did your son's addiction start? What first alerted you that he might be having a problem?
Another good question. And I think it's important to say at the outset that while this is a story of my son's addiction, it really is a story of how I, as his mother, reacted to his addiction. It's really a story about how addiction affects, in this case, the mother or the parents, and certainly families, because, as has been widely stated, addiction is a family disease, very different than other kinds of diseases, but it definitely affects the entire family. And in this case, I was the one who was most affected. I had no idea that Jacob was falling prey to the misuse of drugs. At first, became apparent to me very, very first when I got that phone call, that telltale phone call that no parent wants to get. One evening, a late August evening, Jacob is just beginning his senior year of high school. He's doing enormously well. He's an A student. He's just about to be accepted to the University of Maryland in an honors program. Our family is healthy and happy. Everything is going well. And then this beloved teacher calls me and says, Lisa, I'm calling you just to make you aware that some of Jacob's friends have come to me. They're concerned about him. They think he's hanging around with the wrong crowd. They think he might be either drinking, smoking marijuana, or doing something else. And that was my first sort of real warning from somebody whom I respected that there might be a problem in my household.
Wow. And that's huge. I mean, it's like you said it. It's the phone call you never want to get. It's just, it's one of those phone calls. So what was the toughest part, the real tough part of dealing with your son's addiction? What was that like for you as you were running around trying to find resources to help him?
The tough part was almost twofold. One was my, as you just stated, my trying to find him help, but at the same time trying to keep it secret. Because at the time, and I think a lot of professional women might relate to this, I had a very prominent public professional job. I was a fundraiser, the senior fundraiser for a very large growing hospital. We were in a big capital campaign. We were trying to raise close to $45 million. I was responsible. I had a board of 25 people, a staff of a dozen. So I was trying very, very hard to stay focused on what the goals of my professional duties were, while at the same time, quote unquote, behind the scenes, trying to figure out, is Jake really an addict? What is really going on with him? Or is this just a rite of passage? All kids in high school, right? All kids smoke, all weed, all kids drink, all kids test this stuff. So there were no other signs. He was still doing fairly well in school. He'd gotten accepted to college. And I'm thinking, gee whiz, he really must be okay. They must have this all wrong. Looking back on it, that was Lisa trying to probably deny the fact that he had a problem, because if I faced it, I really wasn't sure what I could do about it. So for quite some time, I hate to say I ignored it. I sort of stuffed it down. I didn't want to face it, and I didn't want anyone else to know about it. And that was the very early stages of his illness.
And it's like almost a denial thing. I mean, there's, you know, addiction, as you're extremely well aware, is filled with blame, shame, and guilt at multiple levels. You know, in this case, it's affecting someone you love. It's a child or a young man in this case. And, you know, you feel all of this about him. You feel it about, you know, yourself. You ask, you know, geez, could I have done something different? You know, is this my fault? Did I, you know, fall off the radar screen in terms of what should be happening in caregiving in him? Did all of that occur to you?
Exactly. That and more. And of course, being a hard-charging professional woman with other responsibilities in our town, I thought, looking back on it, I thought, what did I miss? Maybe I should have been home at 3 o'clock with milk and cookies. You know, maybe I should have read to him even more than I did when he went to sleep every night. Where did I miss? What did I do wrong? My other friends' kids weren't having problems. Why was my child having a problem? So surely it had to come from me. I'm the mom. I'm responsible for the health of my family. I worked in a healthcare setting, so my guilt was even worse. Here I am in a healthcare setting, and I can't even protect my child and keep him healthy. So the guilt and the shame were enormous, and the longer I held it in, either denied it or held it in, actually looking back on this, Dr. Peek, the sicker I got. And that's what, again, forced me, I think, to write this book, just to get it all out.
Wow. So, you know, addiction affects the whole family. So the book is about how addiction affected you, but what did you do to help take care of yourself in a big way?
Well, a couple things. You know, I did try desperately to get help for our son. My husband and I both did. Women, maybe I'm very common, I'm very like other women. You know, if something's wrong, I want to fix it. I'm the mother. I'm the fixer. So I figured, gee, I'll just get Jacob fixed. I'll just get this problem fixed. And that kept me busy for a while. We did find a therapist for him. He did go to an intensive outpatient for a while, an inpatient. We can talk more about his journey. But what ultimately happened to help me is that Jacob had a therapist, and I know you're in that field. So while I think there are bad therapists, there are also great therapists. And we were very fortunate here in Annapolis, Maryland, to find someone who ultimately was not only helpful to our son, but helpful to me. When Jacob finally left Maryland for an outside state treatment center, the therapist looked at me and said, "Lisa, your son is going to have his program. Now, what are you going to do for yourself?" I looked at that therapist as though he had just sprouted 10 heads, because I wasn't the sick one. I do not have an addiction, at least none that I know of. So I thought, I'm not the sick one. Why is he telling this to me? And then I realized, oh my gosh, staying up late at night, crying, obsessing over my son, feeling depressed, trying to keep this a secret, isolating myself from my friends and family. Yeah, I was pretty sick. He suggested that I try Al-Anon. I'd like to talk about Al-Anon, but let me pause to make sure that you and I are together and you might have a follow-up question for me.
No, I love it. Go ahead.
So I want to be careful here because Al-Anon is clearly not for everyone, and the organization itself shuns any kind of major promotion. So I'm going to speak about Al-Anon only as it helped me. That's all I can do. It is an organization that's allied to AA. It's for expressly for families, friends, and anyone who loves an addict. And in my case, it clearly was meant for me. I tried a meeting the first night I went in. I was terrified I would see someone I knew. But of course, there's the anonymity clause, which protected me. The next time I tried a very different meeting, and my husband went with me. I said to him, "Honey, come with me the first time. If you don't want to come back, that's fine, because it's a program for each person individually." So we went together, and of course, we walk into this kindergarten in a church. There's something humbling about that to begin with. Sit down on these little kindergarten chairs, and in the room of 30 people, there were at least four people whom we knew very, very well, whose children were having addiction problems, and we had no idea. So instantly, there was a feeling of relief that I wasn't alone. There were other people in our town who had good jobs, who had good families, who were having the same problems as we were. And that camaraderie alone was a boost to my feeling and getting better.
Oh, that's fantastic. And, you know, I mean, it's that shared story. It's that connectivity. Because that feeling of isolation, especially when you're all wrapped up in, you know, the fear, shame, blame, guilt, and so much unknown and what's going to happen. So your story gives hope to many parents dealing with this problem. How is your relationship with your son? How did that, you know, spin out over time once you began this journey?
Jake, at the time that I started Al-Anon, had just gone to Florida, and I know Florida is a big recovery state, at least South Florida. He had a treatment center here in Annapolis recommended he go there. Jacob would be the first to tell you today that geography is not necessarily the answer. An addict can use wherever, literally. I mean, we know that. They use wherever, in jails or treatment centers or wherever, if they're determined to use. But in Jacob's case, he was a very young 21-year-old when he left Maryland. And I say that because he's my second child. I guess always will be my baby. He was 21, and I was not treating him like a 21-year-old. He really did not act like a 21-year-old. So it was good for him to get away from us, to get away from his parents, to realize that he had to take care of himself, and truly realize that his addiction was something he, not alone, because we love him and would support him to a degree, but that he really had to solve. So when he left, he and I were both on our separate paths of getting well. He in Florida, I here in Annapolis. I continued going to Al-Anon, my husband as well. We both, in fact, still go once a week to a meeting that we love. And we visited Jake in Florida periodically. His first year there was a bit rocky, and it wasn't really until the end of his very first year that he had a major relapse. At the time, because of Al-Anon, I didn't collapse and fall apart and hide under the pillow. I, of course, was upset, but I realized, well, this is his journey. There's just so much I can do for him. When the treatment center director called and wanted me to pay for Jake's care, I said to him, This will be the third time I've had to pay for inpatient care, and I probably most of your listeners know who are involved that this stuff can be expensive. So I said to the treatment center, this will be the third time I've had to pay. How many times do I have to do this? He said, tell your son this is the last time you will pay for it. After this, if he should relapse, he's on his own. We said that to Jacob, and we meant it. I don't think that's what got him ultimately on the path to healing, but it didn't hurt. He knew that from that point on, he was really on his own to find a place to live, to get well, and so on. And thank God he is. It's been 5 years and almost 4 months now. He's been clean and sober. Jacob has become my teacher. He has taught me so much about addiction, and whenever I have a question, if I'm here working at one of our treatment centers, volunteering, or have friends who have kids or family members who are addicted, he is my first go-to person, and he will advise me. He just taught me so much about not just addiction, but really about life and living, and I couldn't be prouder of him than if he had a degree from Harvard or an MIT graduate degree. I'm just very, very proud of him today.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I mean, seriously, it's so hard, you know? So, you know, what advice, you know, what kind of wisdom can you share with individuals and families, you know, who are affected by substance abuse? Because, you know, gosh, you open up any kind of newspaper today, you know, watch television, radio, it's everywhere. And there's no question that with the opioid crisis, with the increasing use of marijuana by younger people, and its open access in certain states, etc., that this is really becoming an issue for a huge number of families. So, you know, based upon your own experience, what kind of words of wisdom might you be able to impart to people who are going through this journey?
So there probably, I would answer that question probably in three ways. First, I would say educate yourself as much as possible about addiction and what it is. One of the first things I did, of course, was go to the internet and read everything possible about it, even you know, how to tell if your child's using drugs, what to say to your child if he's using drugs. So educate yourself, go to a treatment center, attend a family program or a workshop. Just learn as much as you possibly can about drugs. And as you said, today they are getting more and more lethal. So be informed as much as possible. The second thing I would say is don't keep it to yourself. Don't do what I did, because I just made myself sicker and sicker and more depressed. Don't be prideful when it comes to addiction. Share what's going on with somebody you can trust, either a therapist, find a therapist, or a close family member or a close friend. And even more importantly, I would say, share it with somebody, if you work full-time or you work, share it with somebody at the workplace, because chances are you spend a lot of time at your workplace today, and chances are you're going to get a phone call during your workday at some point that might set you back, that's going to cause you to have to leave suddenly, or that's going to upset you. So having a trusted ally at work, whether it's your immediate supervisor, your boss, your next cubicle mate, your secretary, whoever it is, find someone and share it, because that will help you feel better and help you deal with it. And then the third thing I would say is very hard to do. Keep the focus on yourself. Keep yourself healthy. Do all the things you need to do to keep yourself healthy, whether that's taking an hour's walk, going to the gym, eating well, sleeping, all the common stuff we hear every day about how to take care of ourselves, all the messages that you provide on your show all the time on how women can take care of themselves. Because when you're caught up in addiction, it's very easy to forget to eat. You can't sleep. It's easy to forget to do the things you enjoy doing. It's easy to ignore your husband or your healthy children. It's very easy to get obsessed and caught up with that addicted loved one. So as Al-Anon teaches, you somehow have to keep the focus on yourself. when I've had these conversations with Jake about a parent needing to turn away from the child and keep the focus on the parent, he laughs. He says, yes, that is so counterintuitive to being a parent. But in order to survive, you have got to do that. And as I've shared it at various meetings of Al-Anon, if your addicted person is getting sick, then why take the whole family down with him? Why is it fair that 5 or 10 people should have to suffer or die because of one? That sounds cruel and harsh, but it's not fair. It's not fair to the rest of the family. It's not fair to your friends. It's not fair to your spouse, your healthy spouse. So, again, the third message is do whatever you do need to do to try and keep the focus on yourself and what you can change and what you can do.
Yeah, you know, I think that that point is absolutely golden, because I think that a lot of people in your position feel helpless, hopeless, and defeated. They also feel as though the entire situation is out of, as it were, control, their control. Okay, so it's really important to feel that you do have some power here, some empowerment, and that you can control your own response and reaction to all of this, that you have an important role, and that you've got to separate that now and sit down, view the entire challenge for what it is, and just take one small step after another to make this work. That's what's really important. And gosh, you know, it's such a painful journey mentally. It's so, difficult, you know, as you go through this day by day, because you love this person and they feel lost, you feel lost, and sometimes it must feel so hard to even try to grasp control of the situation. I bet you had some really dark moments there, didn't you?
Well, I'll mention a dark moment, but I also wanted to share in reference to what you're saying about control. You know, you quickly learn that there's something called the three C's. You quickly learn that you didn't cause the addiction. You quickly learn that you can't cure it. Well, that you can't control it and that you can't cure it. Even though I went through all those three stages, I was sure I'd caused it. I was sure I could control this. There was a time when Jacob was on Suboxone and he just took one pill a day. And I thought, gee, if I hand him the pill every night after dinner and I watch him put it under his tongue, I can fix him. I can control his addiction. And you can guess how long that lasted. And then you realize you can't cure it. If he wants to use, he's going to. I can't literally lock him in his room for a year while he changes his habits. So that's the three C's. And the other aha moment for me through Al-Anon, there's a phrase called detach with love. And I realized, oh my gosh, you mean as a mother, I can sort of detach from my child? You mean we're not, the umbilical cord really is cut? He really is a separate being from me. He really is a man. He's not a kid anymore. He's 21. He was then.
Yep.
He's a man.
That's right.
And you mean I can let him go? I can just let him go. He will always know I love him. That will never change. He will always know I hate his disease, but I love him. So
that, you see, that is a beautiful differentiator. And, you know, and I think a lot of people, especially parents, get all caught up in the, you know, what he's actually doing and the disease. I want everyone out there to know that, addiction is a disease. This isn't some, you know, terrible disciplinary problem or behavior. This is a disease. And it's about time we all understand that. And certain people are just more vulnerable to it, no different than if you are more vulnerable to diabetes or obesity. It's the same kind of thing. I want to make sure everyone out there knows we're talking to Lisa Hillman. She is the author of Secret No More. And in this case, she really talks about her journey. So it's a real inspiring message for parents, addicts, or anyone experiencing a difficult situation of any kind, that even in those moments when life seems like an ugly jigsaw puzzle with missing pieces, there is beauty and there is hope. What a beautiful, beautiful story. Lisa, I want to thank you for being on the Her podcast. This was a terrific episode.
Thank you for having me, and I just hope it helps some other families.
I guarantee you it just did. All right, everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take just a short bit of moments and run on over to iTunes and give us a review and a wonderful rating so that what we could do is use this going forward, integrated into all of our planning for newer episodes. We want to hear from you. I read these. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.